Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Saving Lives in Slow Motion. Today, I'd like to talk about health inequalities. It's a really hot topic because of many reasons, but health is one of those things I believe that should be equal for everyone. It clearly isn't. It depends very much on where you're born, where you live, the economy of your country, and the kind of health service, if you get access to one at all, that exists wherever you are. Now, there's sort of small and large scales of this, and just to kick off with an example, on a small scale, health inequality can mean that you aren't getting access to something that your neighbour is. And in systems like the NHS, when it's working and functioning at its best, which at the moment I have to say it probably isn't, I don't think there's any doubting that, that shouldn't happen because health access is designed to be equal for all. And if you went back in time a couple of hundred years where only the rich could afford healthcare, then that really is health inequality in action, because people without monetary means wouldn't be able to access health. It's one of the reasons the NHS was founded. So I guess that example is based on income, income being one determinant, if you like, of health inequality. What else is there? Well, a lot of the other factors are indirectly related to income. Income's important. Housing is another factor. So poor quality housing or overcrowding, those factors really affect health, as do education, transport, and work. You know, employment is important. Unemployment is also associated with lower life expectancy. And the last one is environment. You know, where you live in terms of access to amenities, green spaces, and levels of air pollution, for example. And you can imagine, you know, this is one of the reasons why, and we see it again and again, and it breaks my heart, but sometimes you'll see on the news there's a report on air quality, for example, or on the health of children who are suffering because they are housed somewhere that, you know, where there's a lot of mould and the landlords, whoever they might be, aren't doing anything about it, and the child is getting more and more sick, you know. What about on a bigger scale? I don't want to just talk about the NHS. There's a whole episode on that in this podcast series if you're interested. But I mean, one of the things that really sticks with me, and I remember coming across this paper years ago when I was a trainee GP, and this is not just about health inequality, it's also about perception. And this fact may or may not surprise you, but Bihar is one of the poorer states in India, and the levels of self-reported illness in the state of Bihar, so to use kind of lay person's language, I guess, how sick or ill you think you are on a personal or societal level, is lower than that in the United States of America. And that goes by the type of illness that people have. And what this relates to directly is how much people are willing to put up with symptoms or illness or disease. And not for the first time, you know, many times when I've been abroad somewhere far away from the UK, you know, whether it's Fiji or India or Thailand or Zambia, it doesn't matter. If you go to a rural community where resources are poor, it never fails to strike me how happy and resilient people seem to be when they have so little. And, you know, on elective, I went on elective with the wonderful Laura Waters, who's now a leading doctor in HIV medicine. But when we were medical students, we went to Fiji. And I remember vividly there was a chap with the cancer of his tongue, and he'd had surgery on it. But the cancer had spread, and there wasn't much more that they could do for him. And the doctor just said, look, there's nothing we can do for you. I'm really sorry. See ya. And it hit us both hard because there was no kind of end-of-life care. His family, I remember asking the doctor, okay, what's going to happen to him now? And it's like, well, he's just going to go home. And obviously, you manage the end-of-life however you can in the system that you have available to you. And I often think about him in particular, because when we have meetings at work now discussing patients who are approaching the end of their lives with other team members and other teams like the nurses from the hospice or the community teams, I realise how lucky we are here, because there is provision of support, whereas there you're very much left to your own devices. Now, it's interesting because I think in some parts of the world we don't do that enough, where there's almost too much of a reliance on medicine and social services, for want of a better phrase, and not enough in terms of looking after your own. Very difficult for people who don't have family, obviously, but it's a debate that needs to be had. So in a way, it's unsurprising that there are different expectations in terms of self-reported illness. And when you compare Bihar, where the average life expectancy of a male is 60, to the USA, where it's nearer, I don't know, I think it's about 78 or something now, but when the study was done, it was sort of low 70s, I believe. If you work in public health or you're involved in healthcare and you want to reduce health inequalities, the list I rattled off earlier about income and environment and transport and education and employment are the things that need addressing. And it all starts at grassroots level. Again, I remember in Fiji, but also in India when I worked in a place called Calcutta Rescue. A lot of health education in many parts of the world is carried out by people who are not medically trained but have been given agency by nurses and doctors to talk about things like, for example, contraception. It's often women that go out, almost like outreach work, to talk to groups to promote health. And here in the UK, it's funny because we now have health coaches, and we've almost come full circle, and social prescribers as well, who do a little bit of that as part of their role, for sure. Some much more than others. So what we're really aiming for is health equity. And just changing tack and direction a little bit, we've talked a little bit about different countries, we've talked about where you live and factors like that. What about things like race, gender, sexual orientation, neurodivergence, cultural factors, age? I mean, the whole point is, if you're going to aim for health equity, you have to make health accessible or health services accessible to all. And historically, there are groups that are hard to reach. So teenagers is often one that is bandied around, and I would agree. And the reasons are actually quite complex. And one of the things that we've tried to do where I work is to make the environment as inclusive as possible. In fact, recently we put some posters up in the window of the surgery, and one of the lines says, "Everybody welcome." Now, that's a given, because everybody is welcome, but, you know, if you don't, if it's not said and people don't feel it, then we're making assumptions, aren't we? So I think that's really important, personally. The other way is, if you're a health provider, is to try and have some sort of forum, like a patient group, that is, this is the important bit, reflective of the community that you're serving. It can't just be a self-selected bunch. And using that principle of the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And, you know, sometimes you have to make sure that the most vulnerable people in society are looked after.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, I can't do this episode without tipping my hat to Dr. Julian Tudor Hart, who wrote a paper in The Lancet over 50 years ago now. And the bottom line is, and what it's known as, is the inverse care law by Tudor Hart. It's something that's apocryphal amongst GPs and sociologists particularly. And the bottom line is that the people that need the care the most are less likely to get it. And it's to do with all those factors that we talked about before. But, it's astonishing, isn't it? Because, you know, I myself, who's been a patient recently, not just that from that experience, but also with things that go wrong on the patient journey for my patients, as well as things that I hear about in the press, makes me realise that actually, if you are educated and articulate, it's still difficult to navigate your way around the mess that can occur sometimes. And I think, do you know what? You know, what if I was vulnerable and couldn't actually speak up for myself? And I'm talking about something fairly minor where appointments got mixed up or whatever. But actually, you can see how the inverse care law works. People who are unworried and unwell, compared to the worried well, if you like, are really at risk. So again, it's a mixture of those factors, but also that perception of your own health, your self-reported illness. And if you speak to any GP who works in an urban inner city area where there's more illness because of the way that cities were built. In fact, if you think of all the teaching hospitals in most cities, they tend to be in the most densely populated areas, with one or two exceptions. But going back to this point about speaking to people who work in those areas, they will tell you that patients generally are often quite sick, but don't realise that they're that sick. So you could argue in those kinds of communities that there needs to be more work on prevention, more health education. Sounds really patronising, but that whole thing about promoting health and making sure that people are aware of it. And in this day and age, it should be possible. I like inspiring stories, and although we always think about really futuristic things, I was lucky enough for years to work for BBC World News covering stories that were bringing both innovation and hope in terms of health to parts of the world that would, you know, otherwise come to great harm. And there are too many to list, but they include things like a wind-up baby heart monitor for pregnant women, a microscope that you can use in the field to very rapidly work out whether someone's got malaria, for example. I will try and post some links to these, because so often these are things that a lot of the world take for granted. Really, we do. And it's only when you're living somewhere rural, remote, that doesn't have the resources that you realise how essential they are when you get ill. Okay, so that was health inequalities. I hope that's just given you some flavour of the variety of health access that people have on this planet. Do have a look at the show notes as well. Always good food for thought. Okay, that's it for this week. Thank you again for listening. Do let me know if you want topics that are close to your heart covering. Some of them aren't always appropriate, but and some of them are, but I just haven't got round to them, so do bear with me. Thank you again, and until next time, do take care. Look after yourself. Bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.